American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Tuesday, February 15th, 2005. And despite the fact that my KVM switch and my wireless keyboards have decided to take a complete crap, I am going to be able to record this show and upload it to the servers, hoping, of course, that my hands don't get cut off, which we all know is having your Internet connection disconnected. I don't know what's going on. It's funny how sometimes, you know, the connections get a little bit wiry, isn't it? I mean, it makes you think about the times when, you know, if something does happen in the world and they want to keep all the rats in their cages, you know, if they want to keep us all down, all they got to do is just turn off the internet access, and really we're all just bang, trapped in our little cages. That's why sometimes I think convergence isn't such a good idea. But this is Newsreel, your source for independent media and the news that will give you the edge against the core political tyranny that is trying to enslave you. And if you don't think that the core political tyranny is trying to enslave you, why don't you ask the good people of Nepal? But we'll get to them later. And also, you know, all you have to do is turn on the news, see what's going on in the world, and you'll be able to realize that, holy crap, most of what I'm receiving day-to-day is bullshit. So that's why shows like this one exist. This show is a free media. You can distribute it any way you see fit. And I receive no advertising or corporate payoffs in order to make this happen. This show is completely funded by the generous donations of listeners. You can read along with the news stories by going to my live journal. Sean _ Kennedy is my name. And, I don't actually have _ as my middle name. But it'd be interesting to legally change my name to that. My middle name is actually Darcy. Which is better, Darcy or _? Pretty cool. Sean _ Kennedy. I think I like that one. You know it'll be time to turn the page when you hear me say something to the effect of, I'm going to change my middle name. Feedback today. I got one piece of feedback. Sean. Actually, the main reason that the phone number for poison control is on the back of toothpaste. Now, this is because of yesterday's show. We were talking about fluoride and how fluoride is, you know, saturating a lot of products. And, in fact, in iced tea, fluoride is very, very pertinent. As a matter of fact, it's 6.5 parts per million, which is way exceeds the FDA's recommendations. But apparently, this is something that was sent to me here, too, is that because of, apparently, toothpaste contains formaldehyde. Yes, it does usually contain fluoride in disgusting amounts, but that's only a minor thing in comparison to my books. If you go to Google, it comes back with a billion hits, and if you want to take a few moments to dig up more information, you can. That's from Sideslide. Very, very scary. Very scary. I mean, how many of our foods are actually toxic? You know, how much of our food do we take in day-to-day that we know is toxic? Like last night, I had some bad Chinese, I think it was bad Chinese. I'm not too sure. Maybe it was something I drank. Maybe there was something in the mix of the drink I drank, and bang, I'm puking. I mean, how often are we sick now? Have you thought about that? You know, everybody gets sick at about the same time with flus and such. But if you get food poisoning, how often does food poisoning occur day-to-day life? Is it all meat? Is it because, you know, we eat the fuzzy meat and that's what makes us sick? Or is there something else going on there? I don't know. There's some odd crap happening. My wife didn't get sick. She ate the Chinese food. So why did I get sick? Interesting. These are questions you ask yourself when you're, you know, yakking to the porcelain bowl and driving the bus at, about 2:30 in the morning. Have no sort yourselves out today, which is good, which means that none of the listeners or WOGs or anyone else in the galaxy is having any problems. But if you are having problems and you want to get my particular take on how to solve your problems, make sure you email me newsreel@rantradio.com, and I will be able to address your personal, deeply depraved mental derangement issues. But I do have a story related to deeply deranged personal issues, which is coming from some research today. So let's not screw around anymore. Let's go straight into the news. Now, apparently there's a report out, which is how herbs are better than drugs for depression. Now, anyone who's ever smoked weed or, you know, takes any kind of vitamins would tell you that this is a no-brainer. But, you know, it's nice to see that we are getting some reports, even though the mainstream media won't even begin to talk about this, because naturally all the news, I mean, you're not going to see a story like this on the news, because how many drug commercials do you see on the news? So the last thing the drug companies want is you turning to, you know, cheaply readily available nutrients and herbs in order to treat depression, when they can just as easily sell you extremely dangerous toxic drugs that will cause, sudden death in 70% of children and things like that, as we discovered yesterday with the drugs we were talking about. So, well, actually, no, that's wrong. It doesn't cause death in 70% of the children. Just 70% of the people who died were children in the test, and that's why Canada has banned the drug, which the name escapes me right now. Check out yesterday's show, and we'll be able to get into that. But anyway, check this out. An extract from the herbal remedy of St. John's wort is as effective as commonly prescribed drug for people with moderate to severe depression, researchers have reported this week on Friday. They compared the extract called WS5570, which is made by the German company Dr. Wilmer Schwab Pharmaceuticals, and the antidepressant paroxetine, sold by GlaxoSmithKline PLC under the brand name Paxil or Sarasat. So we know that St. John's wort is just as effective as Paxil. But, you know, of course, Paxil has a lot of other side effects. St. John's wort is also known as hypercurum perforatum. But, you know, no one wants to give it, just call it St. John's wort, because that makes it sound just a little bit too, you know, low tech. In the treatment of moderate to severe depression, hypercurum extract WS5570, now that sounds way more technical, eh, rather than just St. John's wort, is at least as effective as Paxil and is better tolerated. So that makes it better. No side effects, all the benefits. Professor Armin Sajedi of the Charité Universitätsmedizin, part of the University of Berlin, which I'm not even going to try to mess around with my German because it's really, really bad, said in a report published online by the British Medical Journal. In the land of medical journals, the British Medical Journal is a big one. The study, funded by the German company who makes the St. John's wort, the researchers compared the treatments in 251 patients between 18 and 70 years of age for 6 weeks. Half of the patients taking the extract reported an improvement, compared with one-third taking the paroxetine or Paxil. Patients taking the extract also reported fewer side effects, such as stomach disorders, according to the researchers. Well, they don't, so they just say stomach disorders, but if you look at the side effects of Paxil, there's some nasty side effects that can come from that. So the fact that you could be taking St. John's wort and it doesn't, that you're not risking things like anal seepage, I'm all about that. Yeah, load me up with the vitamins, dude. Paxil belongs to a class of drugs known as selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs. British and European health authorities have voiced concern that these antidepressants may increase risk of suicide in young people. St. John's wort. Wasn't I talking about that on the show before, that people should probably try that instead of antidepressants? Yeah. Our results support the use of hypercurum extract WS5570, or St. John's wort, as an alternative to standard antidepressants in moderate to severe depression, especially as it is well tolerated, Sajidi added. St. John's wort has been called nature's alternative to Prozac. Well, actually, Prozac should be man's bastardization of St. John's wort, but never mind. Researchers have warned that it can interfere with hormone treatment, antibiotics, and chemotherapy. Don't take these herbs. They can interfere with hormone treatment, antibiotics, and chemotherapy. Well, that means that the nature things get in the way of hormone treatment, which is a man-invasive, antibiotics, which is also man-invasive, and chemotherapy, which is like quite probably one of the nastiest methods of quote-unquote medicine I've ever heard of. So if you're going to go natural, maybe you should just go completely natural and abandon these pill doctors who think it's a really good idea to, you know, just have people, you know, strapped to machines and will kill everything in your system. Early studies have shown the herbal remedy is also effective for treating patients with mild depression. Well, yeah, everybody knows this. This is all old wives' stuff that everybody's been passed down, you know. There's nothing new here. The researchers call for further studies to confirm the findings. Now, why isn't anyone talking about weed? You know, why doesn't anyone talk about weed with this? Why isn't no one, you know, we're talking about a multi-million dollar industry here. You know, Paxil, Prozac, all this kind of stuff. And apparently, all of these drugs are there to alleviate depression. there to what? Make you high in a very mild way. So isn't there a way that we could use something like marijuana, which is a weed and grows readily available, to just create, like, I don't know, some sort of a low-dose pill extract that doesn't make you high but just kind of takes the edge off, just like Paxil and all these other drugs do? Or am I completely out on, whoa, Sean, what are you thinking? Drugs are bad. Well, apparently, I'm in total agreement here. I believe the drugs are bad. That's why I don't want to go on Paxil or Prozac or Xanax or any of these other nasty drugs, which can cause, you know, stomach ulcers and cancer in your lower intestine and anal bleeding and God knows what else. Okay? I mean, realistically, why is no one talking about this? Everyone knows about St. John's Wort, and it's kind of, you know, sort of hush-hush, and there's one little report that's not going to get any kind of media play whatsoever. And they're saying, oh, yeah, St. John's Wort is good. You know, we should probably look at that, but no one's going to do it. So it's up to you to take accountability and responsibility for your own health and begin investigating other possible means of medication if you suffer from depression. And I'm not talking about if you're having a bad day here. If you're one of those people who really do have bad panic attacks where you wind up locking yourself in your house and you don't answer the phone because you know you're going to get wiggy, this is something you might want to look at. Now, apparently, the more brainwashing research is going on here. Now, check this out. In a study conducted a week before the 2004 presidential election, a representative sample answered a series of survey questions about John Kerry and George Bush, including their vote intention. The study consisted of three groups of respondents. One had their own photograph morphed into a picture of Bush. The second had their photograph morphed into a picture of Kerry. And the third was given unmorphed photographs of the two candidates. So let me just clear that. That's a little hard to understand. You're given a photo of the candidates, and without your knowledge, they morph your image into Kerry so Kerry has some of the features that you do versus George Bush, who has none of the features you do. You understand what I'm saying? So it's selective photographs are given to you, tailor-made, to see what your intentions are. You see what I mean? The photographs of respondents were acquired long before the study began. Consequently, none of the 200 respondents realized their own photograph had been morphed in with the candidates. So they didn't know that the photographs had been altered so the candidates look more like them on an individual level. The results demonstrated that the respondents were significantly more likely to vote for the candidate with whom their face had been morphed, both Bush and Kerry. This effect was stronger for people who did not have strong party affiliations, independent voters and strong partisans. So if you're just kind of like, oh, well, whatever, like the majority of the people or the sheeple who don't even vote, you know, all you have to do is look at this photograph and go, well, that guy kind of, on a subtle level, your brain goes, well, this guy's kind of like me. You know, so I think I'll vote for him. In summary, 1 week before the presidential election, respondents' vote choice was swayed by a simple morphed photograph. In politics, as in life, birds of a feather flock together. Now, you take that piece of data, okay, and you realize in how we're getting more and more specific, and all of us out there who are a little bit more technically advanced, we know that since we're getting photographed in national databases, blah, 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 if rather than morphing to individuals, what if we were to take common characteristics, you know, you take the mass majority of the populace who, because everyone's seen their twin, right? Everyone's seen twins around. If you travel a lot, you see lots of people, you'll be in one city, you know, have a buddy or whatever, and you'll go to like another city on across the country and you'll be like, wow, that really looks like my buddy. You know, and they got a lot of characteristics and stuff like that, very, very similar. So if there's a very common thread of these people, especially if you go to the bar, I mean, everybody's trying to look like, you know, this idyllic image of whatever, you could totally sway the vote just by digitally altering the photographs to affect the mind. And this isn't even illegal, okay? It should be illegal. I mean, this is all advertising and marketing in order to, you know, create a presidency. This is a scary concept to me. In a big way. I'd really like to watch stuff like this. Now, there's another study that came out, and this one is a really, really good one. And quite often, you notice how heavily we all rip on ourselves, how we're always like, oh man, I can't believe that these problems are happening, and I just can't seem to make all the stress of the world, and la, la, la. And this is very common online. We see a lot of this in live journals, and people are suffering from depression and stuff like that. But when you check the reasons why, it's not nearly as negative as some people think. Check this out. Understanding yourself, people perceived the most likely to succeed might also be the most likely to crumble under what? Under what? Under the number one killer, stress. A new study finds that individuals with high working memory capacity, which normally allows them to excel, crack under pressure and do worse on civil exams when allowed to work with no constraints. Those with less capacity score low, but they tend not to be affected by pressure. This is because pressure is nothing more than outside influence. The pressure causes verbal worries, like, oh no, I can't screw up, said Sian Bielak, assistant professor of psychology at Miami University of Ohio. What a weird name for a university, Miami University of Ohio. These thoughts reside in the working memory, and that takes up space that would otherwise be pondered in the task at hand. This is the idea of, like, you think too much. That's a terrible statement, but that's probably more accurate, like what they're saying here is more accurate than you think too much. When they begin to worry, then they're in trouble, Bielak told Live Science. People with lower working memory capacities are not using that capacity to begin with, so they're not affected by the pressure. The findings are detailed in this week's issue of Psychological Science. Working memory, also known as short-term memory, holds information that is relevant to performance and ensures task focus. It's what allows us to remember and retrieve information from early step of a long test, such as long division math, or if you know you're doing a series of process, you know what I mean? Essentially, as well, if you have a series of things that you have to do every day, if the memory is there, you have steps and lists and stuff like that. So people who work from lists quite often, or drills or routines, they all use this short-term memory. In these math problems, like long division, students have to perform subtraction and division, and if you're trying to hold information in your memory, you start worrying about performance, then you can't use your entire mental capacity to do the math. The study analyzed 93 undergrad students from Michigan State University to determine their working memory capacities. The students were divided into two groups, high working memory and low working memory. Each person was given a 24-problem math test in a low-pressure environment. The high working memory group did substantially better because, you know, they can store all this data. Then the two groups were given the same test, but where they were told they were part of a team effort and improve their score would earn them team a cash reward. They were also told the performance was being evaluated by math professors. Ooh, had some stress. Under this higher real-world pressure situation, the HWM group score dropped to that of the low working memory group, which was not affected by the increased pressure. Since working memory is known to predict higher-level brain function, the research calls into question the ability of high-pressure tests such as SAT, GRE, LSAT, MCAT to accurately gauge who will succeed in future academic endeavors. Well, look at that. So, like, this SAT and the LSAT and all that kind of stuff might all be bullshit because you can't, deal well with stress. I'm one of those people, I freaking hate tests. I hate tests, I hate paperwork, I hate that stuff. And I like to think of myself as a fairly high working environment, high working memory type person. These are things that are, you think about a lot of stuff. You got a lot of stuff going on in your head. You got to be able to deal with this. This is how, you know, you can, people who are communicators or speakers, public speakers, often are high working memory types. So don't get so down on yourself if you feel like you're scoring low in school. Just because you got a bad score in a school test in a high stress environment, that doesn't mean you're stupid. Nothing could be further from the truth. And now it seems that science is catching up and beginning to realize this. Now, there's a bit of a good news here. A human hybrid patent has been denied. Now, this is great. A New York scientist's 7-year effort to win a patent on laboratory-conceived creature that is part human and part animal ended in failure Friday. Woohoo! Closing a historic and somewhat ghoulish chapter in American intellectual property law. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office rejected a claim, saying the hybrid, designed for use with medical research but not yet created, oh, that's handy, would be too closely related to a human to be patentable. Paradoxically, the rejection was a victory of sorts for the investor. Stuart Newman of New York's Medical College in Valhalla, New York, an opponent of patents on living things, he had no intention of making the creature. His goal was to set a legal precedent that would keep others from profiting off any similar inventions. Well, good for you, dude. But in an age when science is increasingly melding human and animal components for research, already the government has allowed many patents on humanized animals, including a mouse with human immune system. Decision leaves a crucial question unanswered. At what point is something too human to patent? Officials said it was not so difficult to make the call because Newman's technique could easily have created something that was more personal than more of a person than not. But newer methods allowing scientists to fine-tune those percentages, putting the patent office in an awkward position of being the federal arbiter of what is human. I don't see that as being a problem. Personally, I'd love to be the guy in there. If you get someone in the patent office who's like, no, I'm not really into this, let's just turn a lot of them down. And unless, because realistically, last thing we want is human beings being patented. And they can't, you know, create one, human and patent it, so they're going to, you know, nickel and dime it, percentage it, get the numbers carried over, and eventually, you know, they'll be able to patent people. I don't think anyone knows the terms of crew percentage, how to differentiate between humans and non-humans, said John Dahl, a deputy commissioner for patents. Yet neither office is comfortable with "we'll know it when we see it" approach. It would be very helpful if we had some guidance from Congress or the courts. Yeah, we should probably nail this down now so that, you know, we come up with a number, nothing more than, say, 10% human. The Newman case reveals how far U.S. intellectual property law has lagged behind the art and science of biotechnology. The Supreme Court has addressed the issue of patenting life only once, and that was 25 years ago. Well, that's sort of true. They recently just said that anything could be patented so long as it wasn't human. Okay, you can patent anything but humans. It also raises profound questions about differences and similarities between humans and other animals and the limits of treating animals as property. Well, realistically, there is no limits on that. Animal rights are never, ever seem to be enforced in the world. That's why we can have, you know, factory farming. And if they don't want to cross these, you know, certain genes with certain humans, then why don't they just, you know, start experimenting with apes, and then that leads to the capability of... Because let's not forget bioweapons, okay? You know, the bioweapons division, you could get people who are just genetically, if all bets are off concerning apes, why don't we take a gorilla and turn them into, you know, massive slaughterhouse creatures, breed out and genetically alter them so that they are, in fact, aggressive, so that you can heighten their intelligence and you wind up creating intelligent weapon systems. If you don't think that's being happened, I'm just sitting here thinking about this. It is possible with the technology we have today. And if you don't think that's happening, well, you better think again, man. The whole privatization of the biological world has to be looked at, Newman said, so we don't all of a sudden find ourselves in a position saying, how did we get here? Everything is owned. Well, he's got the right idea. And I think that that's something we need to think about in the future. I mean, we've got to know that, you know, hey, these corporations, once they start patenting people, then they can patent offspring. And then what if human, like, okay, let's say we got a patented person, you know? And that patented person becomes impregnated by a non-patented human. Uh-oh, now we're screwed. What's the offspring? Do they own part of them? Does that mean the company gets to take part of their percentage earnings, or they're not entitled to go to school? I mean, we're getting really crazy here. You know, there's some really serious, serious problems that could arise from this, and it's scary stuff. And, of course, there's more core political slavery laws coming into effect. Check this out. Now, listen to this whole article. This Thursday, the Senate Judiciary Committee will begin to debate on the so-called Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act. No clever acronyms here. And why is this bill so bad? Number one, it creates an arbitrary means test, which says those who earn above the median income cannot discharge their debts through bankruptcy, which means that you can't claim bankruptcy if you make more than a certain amount, while those below can. This is an outrage. If we want to discourage bankruptcy abuse, what matters is why you went bankrupt, not how much you earn. The bill would thus badly hurt families earning over $43,000 a year and who have crushing medical expenses, while letting people who are genuinely wasteful spendthrifts but happen to earn less than the median off the hook. This makes no sense. By the way, onerous medical bills are the cause of half of all bankruptcies, and most of those who go bankrupt for this reason have health insurance. So it's not like these people don't have health insurance, it's just they don't have enough. It also, number two, offers a safe haven for violent anti-abortion protesters by allowing them to avoid monetary liability in civil litigation by declaring bankruptcy. Hey, frame shop, can we use this to portray the GOP as enablers of war criminals? And number three, Harvard professor and bill opponent Elizabeth Warren points out that this bill hasn't been updated since it's first written almost a decade ago, and thus it does nothing to curb abuses wrought by Enron's and Worldcon's and of the world. And what a shock. You know, Dianne Feinstein is trying to propose an amendment to combat problem number one, while Chuck Schumer is doing the same with number two. In fact, the only things that's prevented passage of this bill in the past is the abortion issue, and Schumer concerns that it may not be possible to get his amendment passed this time. Number three, of course, won't get fixed with the Congress and this president in power. We need to follow this bill closely. We actually have a chance to stop this one. The Schumer amendment may derail it yet again. If not, at least... Jesus, I hate it when people use words like this. Ameliorate its worst features? Okay, ameliorate. I'm not familiar with that word. Stay alert and be ready to contact your senator. Now, incidentally, in the English language, why, if you have simpler words, why don't you use them? This is something that Stephen King did in his books. That's why more people can read it, more people can be reached. I've never understood people use big words for the point of using big words. Don't get me wrong, I've got a pretty good vocabulary, but I just, you know, using big words for the whole sake of it is just kind of like mental masturbation to me. And there's an update here. There's yet another unsavory feature about this bill. It does nothing to reform the often abused homestead exemption, which allows wealthy debtors to protect their assets through homeownership. And by homes, we're talking about mansions in Florida. So that's something that this bill going through, if you can't declare bankruptcy, then you're enslaved, right? Because debt is the act of slavery. You're in debt to this company. You can't declare bankruptcy. So eventually, you know, what's it going to do? Are they going to show up and start stealing your organs? I mean, it's the medical industry causing all the debt. So what the hell? You'll have to go give blood? Scary stuff. And in the realm of psychotically evil, evil news, we have how the core politicals are murdering nuns now. An American nun who spent decades fighting efforts by loggers and large landowners to expropriate land to clear areas in the Amazon rainforest was shot to death Saturday in northern Brazil, authorities said. Dorothy Stang, who's a hero, who is 74, was shot in the face three times near the town of Anupu, about 1,300 miles north of São Paulo in the Amazon region. Federal police officer Fernando Real said the early morning attack came in less than a week after Stang met Human Rights Secretary Nil Mario Miranda to report that four local farmers had received death threats from loggers and landowners. Great. Last year, loggers accused Stang of inciting violence in the region and supplying weapons and ammunition to local people, a claim her family denies. Well, you know, considering, what is it, like three-quarters of the world's oxygen made in the Amazon rainforest, maybe we shouldn't burn it down? This is extremely serious, Miranda told reporters. We cannot allow this murder to go unpunished. The Brazilian government compared the murder to the 1988 killing of Chico Mendes, the renowned rubber taper who drew international attention to the Amazon rainforest destruction. This is the type of crime that shows a profound disrespect for democratic society, like the crime against Chico Mendes, Justice Minister Marcio Thomas Bastos told the Estado news agency. I'm not doing too bad with the Spanish. German's just way off, but Spanish I can probably try to fake it a little bit. Of course, meanwhile, there's all the people who can speak Spanish going, no, Sean, no, you can't speak Spanish, and you can't even fake it well. The Catholic Church Land Pastoral in Brazil, an organization that helps landless farmers, condemned the incident as an assassination. Well, obviously it was. Stang, a native of Dayton, Ohio, has lived in Brazil since the early 60s and worked in the region for more than 20 years. She was headed to a meeting with local peasants when her group was attacked, police said. No one else was hurt. Wow, so her group was attacked. And she got shot in the face three times. You know they mean it when they shoot you in the face three times. Stang's niece, Angela Mason, who lives in Dayton, Ohio, said her aunt had told her family there was a price on her head. She was basically protected by her status as being an old lady and being a nun. She also recently became a Brazilian citizen and thought that might help, but obviously it didn't, Mason said. Now, isn't that just a little bit more terrifying? To note that, you know, we only hear about the news that affects first world countries, but in the third world nations, you know, these farmers and who are trying to make a living are being, you know, threatened by loggers and large, like, no one's naming names here. Like, in the article, they don't talk about who's really behind this. What companies are really in control of that? Where are the companies making money by slashing the rainforest? Because it's murder. And they're shooting nuns. We'll never hear about it. That'll never make CNN, but it's going on right now. Now we've got some gene doping happening. The 2008 Olympics are still a long way away, but worries are already growing about whether it will be the first genetically enhanced competition in amateur sports. Dr. Theodore Friedman, top advisor to the World Anti-Doping Agency, said the arrival of so-called gene doping to enhance performance is inevitable. The question, of course, is how genetic technology can be used to push the performance of athletes, and at what point does this kind of manipulation cease to be a sport and become just an exercise in biotechnology, Friedman said. Gene doping involves transferring genes directly into human cells to blend into an athlete's own DNA in order to enhance muscle growth and increase strength or endurance. Well, I don't know about athletes, but I'm pretty interested in that. That sounds like a great idea. Unlike steroids or drugs, the added genes would not be detectable. Well, although Friedman said the result in changes the athlete's body could show that doping had occurred. Well, hang on, though. If he's changing his own genetic makeup, then that's just like a method of training. It's like lifting weights, right? I mean, that's you lift weights to make yourself stronger. That's a science. So if you use another science to genetically alter yourself and alter your body, why not do that? But technology typically moves faster than the ways to regulate it, raising concerns among doctors, lawyers, trainers, and athletes who fear gene doping could become the next major sports scandal after the controversy over steroid use this past year. Well, the thing is it permanent? Because if it's like getting a tattoo. You know, if you alter yourself permanently, then I don't really see a problem with this. Friedman was part of a forum Thursday at Portland State University to discuss those concerns and help raise awareness of the threat of gene doping. Well, if it's permanent alteration, again, I don't really see the problem here. Max Melman, a professor of biomedical ethics at Case Western Reserve University, said every leap that biotechnology makes it harder to prevent athletes from taking advantage of it. These new techniques are likely to be far more powerful and immediate and sophisticated, Melman said. The question is, can we prevent that? In order to be able to prevent it, we'll have to be able to tell when it has happened. We have to be able to detect it, and we'll have to have ways of stopping people from making genetic modifications. Well, good luck, dude. You know, I don't think you're going to be able to pull that off, personally. And really, I don't see much of a problem with it, to be honest with you. Why is there such a big problem with this steroids and all the rest of it? Why is it such a big deal? These people they want to alter their bodies, right? And you got to understand, these aren't people shooting up in the back rooms here. If you go to Denmark, it's called sports medicine. You know, that's why all major bodybuilders have spent some time in Denmark, because they all do roids, right? And if that's what you want to do, and you're aware of the risks, and you've done the research, and you want to alter your body because of, you know, to make yourself go faster or stronger, or jump higher, whatever, I don't think that's a problem. So are they saying that, you have to be totally natural right out of the gun? Well, okay, so why don't we get two people who've been genetically modified and then who are both athletes, they have a child, but the child hasn't been genetically modified. But wait, since the child's the byproduct of genetically modified parents, doesn't that give them a percentage and therefore there's a way around that? I mean, realistically, why don't they just pull the mods out and say, fuck it, whatever, let's just do it. You know, everyone watches the Olympics because we want to see these crazy bastards run at 7 million miles an hour. We want to see these guys who can jump over the moon and stuff. So, you know, what's really the problem here? Is it an ethical problem? Because no one seems to be being forced to do this. No one seems being able to be coerced into doing this. Well, what about the country's third world nations who can't afford this research and stuff like that? Well, okay, but I mean, it is an international competition, and you got a guy on the stand, and we're competing. And if the dude has got an edge because he was able to gene dope, then I guess he's got an edge. You know, I mean, that's what the whole purpose of, you know, training hard and all the rest of it's supposed to be about. I don't particularly see a problem with the way that's been set up. And if I wanted to gene dope, you can bet that I'd want to be able to do that. Now, here's something I do have a problem with, which is playing with the HIV virus. Now, don't get me wrong. There's lots of... I don't want to spread FUD about science, but here's something we want to really watch, okay? Researchers at the University of California, Los Angeles, have tweaked HIV to create a gene therapy that attacks cancers in tumors and mice. The research is a step forward for the beleaguered field of gene therapy, which has enjoyed isolated success and suffered repeat setbacks over the last 20 years. But tinkering and fine-tuning will be the key to successful gene therapy, UCLA researchers believe. They published their study in the February 13th issue of Nature Medicine. The UCLA AIDS Institute scientists genetically altered HIV and folded it into an envelope made of another virus called Synbis, which typically infects insects and birds. That turned the altered HIV into a missile that hunted down mastocyzed melanoma cells in the lungs of living mice. Well, that's a pretty layman's term of it, but okay. People might wonder if it's scary to use HIV as therapy, said Irving Chen, who led the UCLA team. Yeah, we would wonder if you're using HIV as therapy. Yeah, I'd be really terrified of that. But in actuality, we've completely removed 80% of the virus, so it's really just the carrier. HIV has been known to mutate, though. A little bit of caution needs to be exercised. Other researchers have tried morphing HIV into gene therapy with limited results. It hasn't been possible before, Chen said. Usually, researchers take a virus and try to modify its own envelope, but it falls off, becomes so deformed it's not able to infect cells anymore. Oh. The secret to the UCLA's researchers' success was adding the Synbis cloak, Chen said. He and his colleagues suspected the virus might make the HIV gene therapy more stable, and results of the study showed that they were right. The scientists also inserted a glowing firefly protein into the virus to track its progress. Hey, where'd that gene go? Watch my trace. They used a light detection cooling charged coupling device, or CCD camera, to look at the glowing protein inside living mice. Because the protein was attached to the gene therapy, the researchers could see the treatment and see it hit its mark. Well, now, it's science. I don't know a lot about this kind of science, but I'd be really cautious about this kind of thing. You know, they say that all it takes is one nut, one place to create some nasty strain or a bug that can just, you know, green jelly the world. If they can use this to help people, that's fine, but I'd want this seriously tested right out the yin-yang. And trying to save a field like gene therapy because of, you know, the one or two big wins, gene therapy's not going to go away. It's a science. We need it. We need to be able to use it so it can save lives. And if you can use this disease to save lives, that'd be cool, and I think it's a really, really good idea. But I'd want to just make sure we got enough testing on this. This is not something we want to just throw to the wolves of the FDA, because this is kind of scary stuff. Now, in the land of totally terrifying, we have Norway, who wants to make the act of making MP3s illegal. The government on Friday proposed a new copyright law in Norway to make it illegal for Norwegians to copy songs from their own CDs onto MP3 players, but legal to do so for making a CD duplicate. Okay, now, this law, of course, I have a huge problem with, because it's like, how do you enforce it? The proposal, intended to bring Norway's law in line with European Union rules, drew immediate praise from the music industry and film industry, as well as criticism from opponents, because the music industry and film industry are evil pricks. Even though Norway has remained outside the EU, it is bound by most of the bloc's directives through the European Economic Area Agreement. Great. The new proposal would allow fines and a maximum penalty of 3 years in prison. 3 years in jail for violating copyrights and engaging in computer piracy. So if you load your Marilyn Manson CD onto your MP3 player, you can do 3 years in the slammer, according to this law. The amendment, which requires Parliament's approval, would make it illegal to crack security codes on DVDs or CDs or provide software or hardware for doing so. A news release said it would be legal for persons to make a copy of their own CDs or DVDs for private use, even if that means cracking the code, as long as it's being copied onto the same digital medium and not another one. Well, it's my stuff. I bought it. I bought the CD. It's my property. You know, give it to me. Let me do what I want with it. You know, holy crap. And furthermore, it's not like I'm taking this and reselling it. I'm just using it on my MP3 player. Jesus. For example, a CD security code could be cracked to play a recording to play on your car stereo. Since CD player would be seen as an appropriate medium, the news says, but the security code could not be cracked for recording onto an MP3 player, since such a device has not been appropriate for a CD. What? Gissel Hennemir of the University of Oslo's Department of Informatics said the law was unclear and unenforceable. Yeah, no shit, it's unenforceable. We are going to be a nation of lawbreakers if this law is passed in its current form, he said in the state radio network NRK. For his part, Hennemir has already copied an appropriate song to his own MP3 player, Radiohead's Hail to the Thief. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's nuts. But apparently this is the kind of laws that are being passed in Norway and places like that. This is the stuff they want to bring in. Now, that hasn't made law yet. They're going to be voting on that, and chances that's going to be voted down. But this is the kind of stuff they're going to want to bring in. And all they got to do is get it in one country on the little blue ball. We got to start looking at it as the little blue ball. You know, what goes on in the Amazon affects you. What goes on in Norway affects you. Okay? And what goes on outside the little blue ball affects you as well. Like the counter satellites. Just in case you were wondering whether or not the Pentagon was really serious about knocking out other countries' satellites out of orbit, comes this item from the C4ISR Journal. The Defense Department, it seems, has launched a series of exercises designed to sharpen its understanding and management of counter-satellite operations. The 3-year Joint Space Control Operations Negotiation, JSCON, program will help the Pentagon figure out which satellite killers to buy and determine which procedures to follow when knocking orbiters out. Great. I'd like to know just what exactly does the United States think it's doing? Guys, it's space. You don't own space. According to a report from the Pentagon's Testing and Evaluation Office, the Defense Department wants to target an adversary's space capability by using a variety of permanent and or reversible means to achieve five possible effects. Deception, disruption, denial, degradation, and destruction. Dun-dun-dun. How about dipshit? The JESCO and effort includes three field tests. The C4ISR journal Jeremy Singer notes, the first of those, Terminal Fury 05, was scheduled to take place in December, according to the report. It was to be followed by Terminal Fury 6 and a Unified Endeavor 06. So these are the project names. We might want to look into that. Do a search for Terminal Fury and Unified Endeavor. Not surprisingly, the Pentagon refused to give details on the exercises. Yeah, no shit. But, as Singer observes, the Air Force has, for at least the past few years, been working on systems for neutralizing enemy satellite capabilities. The service announced in October 2004 that one such system designed to disrupt satellite radio transmission, is now being fielded. In 2003, Air Force released its Transformation Flight Plan, which spelled out a number of anti-orbiter weapons, including ground-based lasers, air-launched missiles, and space-based radio frequency transmitters capable of disrupting or destroying other satellites. So they're talking about putting HERF guns in space to, like, you know, murder other satellites. Isn't that lovely? And, of course, as we all know, good old Donnie there with his little SS, I'm talking, of course, about Rumsfeld. He was going to be charged by Germany for war crimes, but that's not going to happen. Donnie's going to get to walk. Germany's federal prosecutor says the allegations of the United States Defense Secretary of Donald Rumsfeld, and other top Washington brass were responsible for the Abu Ghraib must be investigated in the U.S., not under German war crimes law. Well, then what's the point of the German's war crime law? Thanks so much. You just cut the nuts off your own people. The decision deals a blow to the American group that brought the case, but it could ease German-American tensions. Well, who gives a shit? The guy's a war criminal, dude. For more than 2 months, legal petition to investigate United States Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld on war crimes charges connected to Al-Ghraib torture scandal threatens the future strained relationship between Berlin and Washington, where diplomats have been working overtime to patch up relations lately. The case made headlines again in recent weeks in the run-up to annual security conference in Munich because Rumsfeld had threatened to sit out of that meeting if the petition against him wasn't dropped. I won't go if you're going to charge me with a crime. Well, that's because you're a criminal, dude. On Thursday, Germany's federal prosecutor, Kay Nehm, said his office would not pursue the case. In his statement, Nehm said the German authorities could only pursue the allegations if U.S. authorities refused to do so. Well, if he's a war criminal from America, and Americans are in on it, and they're all top brass, and since he is the authorities, he's not going to prosecute himself, hello. And currently, there's no evidence of there is no evidence that they won't follow the prosecute him. What? The men accused of torture at Abu Ghraib were all American citizens. None of the victims are German, and the case should either be tried in U.S. or the victim's own country, as Nehm's office said. Yeah, they're bailing out because they're chickening out against the U.S. That's what's going on there. Rumsfeld left open last week whether he would attend the prestigious conference and attributed his uncertainty to the petition. It's certainly an issue, as it was in Belgium. It's something we have to take into consideration, he said. Yeah, there are known knowns, and there are unknown knowns, and there are known unknowns, and unknown knowns, knowns, knowns. The conference, officially known to the Munich Conference on Security Policy, could be described as a world economic forum on defense issues. I bet you that's going to be some interesting stuff going on there. It brings together minister-level defense experts and members of government from around the world. Even without Rumsfeld, infamous for his spirited defense of the Iraq and last year's conference and his sparring with Germany's foreign minister on the run-up for the war year before, Americans will still be well represented at the event with speeches by Senator Joseph Lieberman, Hillary Clinton, and John McCain. And here's something I bet you didn't know. I bet you didn't know that the country of Nepal is completely under martial law. I bet you didn't know that. Nepal, all communication links were cut after King, and I'm going to screw this guy's name up, Ganendra's announcement of suspending parliament and fundamental rights in Nepal on Tuesday, the 1st of February. Air links have been closed, roads have been blocked, and other transport links delayed. Armed security forces and riot gear are deployed. Leaders of major political parties, trade unions, and student organizations are under house arrest or detained. The army is stationed at the editorial offices of all national dailies in order to censor them. Outside of Kathmandu, the Mayo strike is apparently observed. A student demonstration at the Prithvi Narayan campus in Pokhara was fired on by military gunships. Those are the choppers, leaving several protesters badly injured, if not dead. All FM radio broadcasts outside at Kathmandu are blocked, and those broadcasting in Kathmandu play only entertainment oriented programming. The BBC FM station recently established in Kathmandu is forbidden from broadcasting news in Nepali, so you can't broadcast it in the actual language. Newsstands outside of the valley have been closed, and a 72-hour blockade on long-distance public bus travel in and out of Kathmandu is in place. So if you want to get in and out of Kathmandu, you got to sit there for 72 hours and wait. That is in a country right now. That's happening right now. Nobody knows about it. Nobody knows about what's going on in there. We've got a complete media blockage. Isn't that fantastic? And you don't think that can happen here? Well, guess again. Guess again, because things are already sliding into place. Things are already moving in that direction. It's very, very scary for us, and that's one of the reasons why today's Daily Hack is something I highly recommend everyone download and check out. Now, this was something that was sent to me by... who sent me this? I think it was No Delete sent me this. It's on my live journal. And this info might be useful to disseminate to the WOGs before the collapse. And if you don't think it's coming, guess again. The site has an entire Army military survival manual. The manual is based entirely on the keyword survival. The letters in this word can help you guide your actions in many survival situations. Whenever faced with survival situations, remember the word survival. And it gets into that, and it breaks it down. It's a great manual. I actually have an original copy of the manual. It's something I picked up somewhere along my way. Fantastic book. Highly recommend it to everyone. Make sure you understand and take accountability and responsibility for your own fate. You know, we got no fate but what we make. And luckily for us, we've got enough rights and freedoms left that I can make broadcasts like this. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of the people willing to fight for freedom. Those are Jesse, Anonymous, and Anonymous. Jesse, Grey Ghost, Robert, Forleet, Michael, Matthew, Matt, Kevin, Derek, Jesse, Desert Runner, Eric, Speaker, Jeff, Malcolm, Peter, Keith, Timor, Weblife, Richard, Greg, Evan, Matt, Drake, Levi, Ashton, David, Brian, Austin, Tara, Host Mojo, Jonathan, Adam, Mystique, Mark, Jonathan, Trevor, Brandon, Art, Diarmude, Peter, Jesse, Brandon, Justin, Matthew, Dylan, Lars, Daniel, Anonymous, and Philip. Now, if you would like to have your name read out at the end of every month, now those are for the people for the month of January. If you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, keep me going, keep me broadcasting, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. It helps me out, and it really does make a difference in the world. Special thanks to some hard net runners who brought the data to you today. We're talking about Transix, who does a lot of work. This guy, you would not believe how much mail I get from Transix. Sylvanus, who sends me a lot as well. All these guys send me a bunch. PolySci, Ricky Rocket, Druid, Y. Samaru, No Delete, Desert Runner, Judas, Sideslide, Melchizedek, Astrophysics, and Falwear. Falwear? Falwear. Like Falcon Werewolf. W-Y-R. F-A-L-W-Y-R. Well, thanks very much for sending me that news. No digital baptisms this week, but if you would like to have yourself immortalized by yours truly by giving you your online name, because it's hard to come up with them sometimes, and one of the reasons why I use my own name is, well, I couldn't really choose one for myself. So it's a lot easier if somebody else gives you one, I think. So if you'd like to be digitally baptized, please let me know. And if you've got any news or stories, email any inquiries, requests for advice, requests for digital baptism to Newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. And if you like the music in the background, which is really cool, found it on some news groups, you can pick up the album by SMP, which is called Future Crimes. Really, really neat. So until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.
ridiculous you call it, babe. You ain't seen nothing yet. They got Pepsi in the Andes. They got McDonald's in Tibet. Yosemite's been turned into a golf course for the Japs in the Dead Sea. Is alive with rap. Between the Tigris and Euphrates, there's a leisure center now. They got all kinds of sports, they got Bermuda shorts. They had sex in Pennsylvania. A Brazilian grew a tree. And a doctor in Manhattan saved a dying man for free.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. It's a miracle. Another miracle.
By the grace of God Almighty and the pressures of the marketplace, the human race has civilized itself. It's a miracle. Breaks his fucking fingers. It's a miracle.